meeting is now being recorded.
Thanks. We are a small group today, but others can catch up by listening, and we're also going to make progress on a list. So I would like to go ahead unless anybody thinks that we're not at quorum or otherwise has a different thought. So I'll see if there's any hands or comments for that. Seeing and hearing none, let's proceed forward. And so let's do the first part of the agenda, the administrative stuff. If there's anyone on the phone who is not in the Adobe room, I'd ask if they would please identify themselves now. Not hearing any, I will note that it's possible that Malcolm Huddy will join us by phone. He's traveling but should be able to get to a phone very shortly. Now, next item of business, statements of interest. Does anybody want to indicate any change, update, or anything else with respect to a statement of interest? Seeing and or hearing none, we can move on. Thank you. So the second item on the agenda is the status of the sign-up sheet. And so this is something that we've visited before, and it's simply a reminder, in a sense, that there is a sign-up sheet out there for issues. There are some open ones left, discovery, evidence, and statements, although I've started work on that. I'd be happy if someone else wanted to pick it up, but if not, I'm going to move that forward on the list in the next week or so. Another open one is other comments, payment of fees. Another one is other comments, WTO rules for least developed countries. And there's two other comments at the bottom of the list. Translations and interpretation is one of them, and types of hearing. And so if anybody would like to grab one of those, please feel free, and I would encourage you and would love to see that happen. I've also spoken by email with Bernie today. We're going to change the sign-up sheet in just a little bit. We're going to expand it a bit. And by that, I mean we're going to add some columns, one for accomplishment of first reading, one for accomplishment of second reading, with some links to the meeting at which those things happened. So that it's sort of a ready reference guide to where we stand. I think it'd be quite nice. And so other than that, I have nothing much to say about the sign-up sheet, but would be willing to open the floor for comments if there's anybody that wants to make a comment. Seeing and hearing none, I will note to Bernie, Brenda, and Sarah that I thought Caboose was on the call and or in the Adobe room, and for some reason I don't see him now. And so if he is one who is called out to, you might double check and see if that connection is needs some attention.
David,
or maybe
this is
Brenda.
Yes,
hi, Brenda.
Caboose did not answer his dial-out today.
Okay, my mistake. I thought I saw his name. So, moving forward, and Sam or Liz, over to you. The third item is just a status update, if there is any, of the ICANN legal and policy team's work with respect to the getting the SOs and the ACs up to date or educated with respect to their roles in the IRP and helping them with the process work on that. Sam or Liz, would either one of you like to comment on that?
Hi, David. This is Liz. So, yes, we have been working with our policy team in terms of we've developed the process flow in terms of the contribution points and that needs to be made along the lines with the SOs and ACs, and also where ICANN can help this along. We'll continue to work with them and build out that process some more, and we'll report back when there's more to provide an update to the group on.
Okay. Thank you, Liz. I have a comment, but before I make it, I'll ask Bernie. His hand is up, and I missed it before, but Bernie, please go ahead. You have the floor.
Thank you. Two little points. On a practical point, you did see Caboose's name. When staff is asking to dial out someone, you'll see their name and a little green arrow in the participants box. It doesn't mean they have answered. It means we're trying to connect with them. So that may be the source of the confusion. The second thing is posting a something relative to the public comment period. I've discussed with the people who managed a public comment, and they would be okay if we simply posted a summary of the comments without any comments next to them until we wrap up. And I'm wondering if that would be okay with the group.
It sounds like it might, Bernie, but could, I may not fully understand. When you say a summary of what our work is, a summary report of our work, is that what you mean?
No, not at all. Hmm. Simply a summary of the comments that have been made.
I don't see any problem with that, as long as that would also include a link to the actual comment page, so that if somebody wanted to dig a little deeper, they could. Is that... Does that make sense? Does anybody else in the group have any thoughts on this? But Bernie, that sounded reasonable to me.
All right, thank you very much.
Oh, okay, thanks, Bernie. I just wanted to, with respect to what Liz said, thank you, Liz. I plan on being present at ICANN 59, and so if there's any assistance I could render as the lead of the IoT, let me know. I'd be happy to do it. I should note to the group that I have been asked to comment briefly about IRP to the subsequent procedures PD policy development process working group. That's going to be next week. And typically what they're looking for, I believe, is what I did at ICANN 58, and it's simply an update to these groups as to what our work is, roughly, and where we are in the process. And when I say where we are in the process, it's a general statement, not a specific statement, talking about our work on rules and comments that we've received, that we have received with respect to the rules, and that we're addressing them and moving forward. And actually, I would say that we're starting to catch a good rhythm and pick up our speed. And the CCNSO has asked for a similar update again at ICANN 59. And so when I do the slides, which I hope will be in the next day or so, I will send them to this group as well. And people, if they have any concerns, should let me know or come on list and let the list know. Aubrey, your hand's up. You have the floor.
Yes. Thank you. This is Aubrey speaking. As one of the co-chairs of the new GTLD subsequent procedures group, I think they'll probably want that will be good to start with, but I do think, and so just so you'll be ready for it, more of a discussion. They're looking into all the issue resolution and the appeals mechanisms and everything else for subsequent procedures. So there may actually be question and answers on how all of this fits into that. So it isn't just give us an update. You should be ready for some conversation. I just wanted to warn you. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. And if no one in this group objects, I would plan on doing that. And the qualifier that I would give to that group, of course, is that this is where things stand now, but things are not complete. And even things that move through a second reading may, in all probability, be sent out for another public comment. So happy to do it, Aubrey, and I'm looking forward to it. Is that a new hand?
No, it's an old hand, but I'll say something else and apologies. They may even say things that cause us to review. I don't know to what extent we can, but you know, because they're going through what are the requirements that need to be met by the various functions. So, you know, that it could be an interesting conversation. But, yeah, I just wanted to know that it isn't, I don't expect it to be a simple report. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. And to the extent there is a request that we do something, I will bring it back to the group as I remember it, and also a link to the subsequent procedures meeting so that anybody here would have a chance to take a look for themselves if they want. So thanks very much. That makes sense. I think the CCNSO presentation at ICANN 59 is not going to be that extensive. It's really an update as I understand it. So moving on, we have the second reading of the timing issue, but as I mentioned, Malcolm sent me a note, and he is traveling. He does expect to be available on the phone, So I'm just going to move him down after the other two second readings. So on the take-up agenda item number five right now, which is a second reading on the joinder issues. And I'm looking for hands, don't see any, so I'm going to move forward. And I gave in the agenda a link to the email that summarizes, but I would like to just read through a couple of things from the email to make sure that it's clear. And what I said in the email, which was sent out on June 5th, is we agreed at first reading certain things, and they are as follows. And as I read this, I'm not looking at the Adobe. So, Bernie, if you need to interrupt me, if any hands come up or anything urgent, let me know. Here's what we agreed at first reading, that all those who participated in the underlying proceeding as a party, and by underlying proceeding we're talking about the expert panels, that they received notice from a claimant in IRPs under the bylaw section 4.3B3A3, that's the expert panels section, of the full notice of the IRP and the request for IRP, including copies of all related filed documents, contemporaneously with the claimant serving these on ICANN. Secondly, that all such parties have a right to intervene in the IRP. How that right shall be exercised will be up to the procedures officer, the procedures officer, that's a defined term, member of the panel, of the IRP panel, who may allow such intervention through granting IRP party status or by allowing such parties to file amicus briefs as the procedures officer determines in his or her discretion. No interim relief or settlement of the IRP can be made without allowing those given amicus status as a matter of right, as described here, and a chance to file an amicus brief on the requested relief or terms of settlement. And the third point, in reviewing such applications and without limitation to other obligations under the bylaws, the procedures officer shall endeavor to adhere to the provisions of the bylaw section 4.3S to the extent possible while maintaining fundamental fairness. That's the section on expedited hearings or maintaining, moving things forward. And so that was the first reading on the joinder issue. That is open for discussion, and the point here is to try and get agreement to a second reading. This has been out on the email as well, and I haven't seen anybody objecting, and so that's what I'm asking for here. If anybody has a comment or objection, absent which I will take as consent for a second reading. And I see no hands, and I don't. Liz, you have a hand up. You have the floor.
Thanks, David. So from ICANN's standpoint, I think globally, the three points that you've raised here from a principal standpoint is, with the exception of the section two, the second paragraph, I think, in principle, ICANN is okay with that. I think there are certain things that we raised that needs to be defined in the procedure as we develop them for joinder that we raised in our April 26th email as to timing and confidentiality concerns and standard of review for the procedures officer that I think that we will need to be fleshed out when we do develop the procedures for it. The one area of concern that we do have is with respect to the second provision, the clause that says no interim relief or settlement of the IRP can be made without allowing those given amicus status as a matter of right, to, as described here, and a chance to file an amicus brief on the requested relief terms of the settlement. We are concerned about that because it just seems that the right to enter into a settlement is between two parties to the IRP, and it seems that somebody with amicus status should not be allowed to intervene in the settlement rights of the parties. So we're just trying to get a better understanding of what exactly this provision is intended, and how do you foresee this being fleshed out when we build the procedures behind it?
Thanks, Liz. The way I envision the amicus brief, someone who's participating as an amicus, rather, the way I saw their right in that stage was simply a right to comment on the settlement, not to be able to block it. I mean, that would be up to the panel to whether or not to. I'm sorry, I was distracted. To accept or to agree to the settlement. And so, with respect to the other points you raised, it strikes me then that on the joinder issue, we are not able to get to second reading because I don't think we should sort of close the issue out with other with aspects of it that need to be fleshed out. So my request to you would be, Liz, if you can, as quickly as possible, and by that I mean in the next week or 10 days, maybe put these points on the list so that we can discuss them and try and get to second reading in the next meeting then, or conceivably on the list. But I'd like to try and do it all together. At least that would be my personal preference. But I'm open to comments from anybody else or from you, Liz, if you want to make another point.
Hi, David, sorry. With respect to laying out the other issues that we previously raised on in our April 26th email, I'm happy to do that within the next week. And on the settlement provision, I understand you're saying that you're not the intent is not for the party to be able to block the settlement, but I guess our question is why would they be allowed to comment on the settlement if they're not a party to the IRP?
Liz, the way I would look at it is the person or the party, rather, that's participating as a amicus or as a party to the IRP. I mean, obviously, if they're participating as a party, they'll be involved. But if they're participating as amicus, it's because the procedures officer put them in that role. We have to recognize that this is the winning party below at the expert panel. And so I'm happy to read and to consider the points that you'll put out there on the list. That would be fine. I mean, I can certainly be and by the way, these comments I'm making are as a participant, not as a lead. I don't have any weighted say in this, but my sense is even if they're just an amicus, they are the party that won the expert panel hearing below. But I will look forward to your comments and rethink my position in light of them. Greg, your hand is up, so you have the floor now.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. I think, you know, maybe something that is confusing things a bit is that we don't have a lot of different terms for parties here. And so by using amicus, amicus can mean a number of different things generically. It can be somebody who has some sort of an interest in the outcome. It can be someone who wants to contribute some sort of legal thinking or argument just because they have some sort of connection to the case. But I think what we're talking about here is a very direct connection. They're talking about somebody who's essentially the party below. And maybe by rolling that status into the amicus status, we have created a bit of fog. So rather than saying that the party below has no standing as amicus to comment on or challenge in any way a settlement that actually affects their case, we can call them something other than the amicus to make it clear that they're, in essence, a third-party beneficiary is not at all the right term for this. And they're more a ping-pong ball that's being batted around. I know the ball doesn't usually get a say in these things, but it seems in this case that's, in terms of both substantive and procedural fairness, if this is going to affect the party below, they should have a say not only in that would be heard by the panel, but with regard to any settlement that ultimately affects them. Besides other types of amici, I don't think MIT should have that strong a role in settlement. But this is a particular procedural posture that we have to recognize as being unique. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. And I think that what this discussion highlights is the joinder issue is not ready for second reading. And I think you make a good point about the terminology. I'll have to take a look at that. Liz, if you would be kind enough to put the comments on list, I think we should all take a look and give this another thought in light of the comments you put out there. And then we'll take this up in the next meeting. Unless you want to say, you know, unless you want to object or have anything further to say about it.
David, this is Sam. I'm using Liz's Adobe hand. I think, you know, trailing off of what Greg just said, I think it's really important that whatever rights people have within the proceeding are also tethered to whether or not they're actually, whether each individual is alleging that ICANN violated its bylaws or not, because if they're concerned about an aspect of settlement that doesn't have to do with a violation of the bylaws, then it probably, that wouldn't seem to be within a realm of rights for the IRP. So I think we need to be really careful about how we're aligning this to, is this about a violation of ICANN's bylaws or articles of incorporation?
Thanks, Sam. You make a good point that a settlement can be more comprehensive even than the underlying dispute. So all I would ask is that in your comments, try and be as comprehensive as you can and make that point so that we can move this thing towards conclusion at the next call. At least that would be my hope. Obviously, once you make a comment, I need to reconstitute the issue anyway, the joinder issue, in light of those comments. So hopefully we'll make some progress, but I appreciate your point. Anybody else have anything to say on this issue? Before we move to the next issue. Seeing or hearing none, I heard someone join the phone. Malcolm, was that you?
It is indeed, David. I joined during that discussion. I apologize for not having been able to join earlier, but I'm afraid my flight was delayed.
Not a problem, and I mentioned that you were traveling. So before we get to you, let me just mention timing of this call. We're now 26 minutes into the call. And so Malcolm wants to move forward on timing, and I noted in the chat that Aubrey, who is going to lead a discussion on ongoing monitoring, is leaving a little bit early. So I will not – I said I'd move up second reading on joinder and retroactivity. I won't move up retroactivity. We're going to move to Malcolm now and then to Aubrey, and then we'll come back to retroactivity and go from there. So Malcolm, over to you. If you're prepared, over to you.
Okay. Well, on timing, we did a first reading on our last call. I think most things, I think really the points have all been extremely thoroughly aired. Essentially, I mean, Greg put it very well, I thought, on the list this week when he said that people should not be allowed to sit on a claim that has ripened and of which they're aware indefinitely. They should be required to bring it forward or to lose it. And that is to everyone's benefit, and that's to the community's benefit in ensuring that ICANN is indeed held to account. And to that end, we have got a very strict timing rule of 120 days, much more strict than in many comparable proceedings. But 120 days after the claim has ripened and the claimant is aware that they are able to bring it. However, a claim should not be struck out for being too late before it is possible to bring it. And therefore, there cannot be a concept of repose. And that is it. So we are now ready for a second reading, I believe.
Thank you, Malcolm. I have, over time, tried some workarounds, really don't get any traction. And so I too, think we're probably at the position ready for second reading. And so the floor is open. And seeing or hearing no comments, I think we can accomplish second reading. And then what we're going to do, I believe, is as we close issues, is we'll build our report based on how we close the issues. And it's my belief that we will probably go out for a second round of public comments. And so, Malcolm, as we write up this section, I may look to you to write that up. But we're not there yet. But, I mean, if you want to start on this, you could certainly be welcome.
Thank
to.
You for the notice. I will get working.
Okay, so I think that issue is done. and then we're going to move. Aubrey, are you ready to lead the discussion on ongoing monitoring?
Sure thing. This is Aubrey speaking.
Thank you.
Okay. And this has actually been a funny one, because when I first looked at it, I thought, oh, that's easy. And then the more I started to dig at it, the more I realized that, there's a few questions to be dealt with. So the reason I thought it was easy, and basically ALAC recommends that as we gain experience with these new procedures, there's ongoing monitoring to ensure continued improvement. And I searched through the rest of it, even though there was a table, I searched through the rest of it for monitoring used anywhere else in the comments, and I didn't find any. So I'm fairly certain that this is the only one. Now, this may be based on my having a misunderstanding or a misreading of the role of the IoT, in that I had assumed that there was a continuing IoT in some sense past the creation of these procedures. I'm not so sure about that anymore. I mean, the bylaws talk about an IRP oversight team shall be established in consultation, and it goes on about its duties, and we know those. It never talks about it blinking out of existence once the work is done, as it were, once the, you know, the, God, I'm losing my words. Once the rules of procedure are done, yet it doesn't quite say that. And my reading had been, oh, it's there. So any of the monitoring and such, it should have a role in that. But then, as I said, I read through and I realized that there's no way to even renew the IoT listed in the bylaws. It no longer makes sense to me that that is the solution, or I have doubts that that is the solution. So if indeed there isn't an IoT there, it drops down to a next paragraph that talks about a standing panel itself may recommend amendments as such to the rules of procedure. Now, personally, I find that sort of problematic, even though it says that they'd have to be approved by the board after comments. But somehow that the rules of procedure could change just because the panel said it should and the board agreed after a comment struck me as far too much exclusion of the rest of the community. So that indeed struck me as a problem there. You know, to say that they're going to look at possible improvements to the standards of procedure without there being some community process seems problematic to me, to say, oh, okay, the panel will just take care of it. They should monitor. So looking for 6 is that it talks about that. So at the moment, I have, and as I say, I'm not at all sure that this works as a solution, that the IoT in consultation with standing panel shall review the rules of procedure after some unit of time to ascertain whether any improvement or other changes are required. All changes would be subjected to community review and board approval. And then after that, the rules of procedure would then be reviewed every some period of time. But as I say, which seems the simple solution if there is an IoT. If there isn't an IoT, then I'm still somewhat floundering, even though when I first wrote this thing down, I thought I had it, but then I started digging deeper, and I'm not sure I have it. So I'll stop, and I see there's at least 2 hands up. So Liz had her hand up.
Hi, Aubrey. This is Sam talking through Liz's phone. I agree with your reading of the bylaws that the IoT isn't an ongoing standing body, and I think that the IoT, as it's set out in the bylaws, has a role up until the point where the standing panel is stood up and has also looked at the rules along with the IoT. So I think that there's still a long period of time for the IoT to be in place, but then the standing panel comes in, and that's and one of the reasons that the standing panel was selected, and I take your concern around this, giving the standing panel that kind of sole authority with the public, then going to public comment around rules changes, but part of the purpose of putting in a standing panel was to have a group of people who actually then get into the experience of it and look and say, is this meeting continuing to meet the goals of it? Do we think it can be revised? I think that we also need to recall that there's the ATRT, which will happen on every five-year cycle, and it's natural for the ATRT to review the effectiveness of the IRP, and the ATRTs could always require a new group to be stood up to do kind of a more in-depth view of it. So I think that there are some other opportunities, even without a lot of detailed work about review being spelled out, that there will be opportunities to review. Of course, I think that having some sort of expectation written into the procedures that there will be a review period for it and that they will be looked at and they're not to be seen as static, and also requiring that there be public consultation on it and coordination with ICANN community is important. So I think that there's probably some room to keep innovating with that.
Hi, this is Aubrey again. One thing I was thinking, once I thought of it blinking out, I also thought of it being possible to actually blink back in, you know, and to be created by the EC, et cetera, when needed. I think adding it to the ATRT is possibly a good solution, though we may need to look at whether we would need to actually say something about that, that it would specifically look at those, because I'm not sure that it automatically slots into it. And I also know that from somewhere else I was saying, oh, yes, ATRT is the solution. And I do want to make sure we don't pound too much stuff onto ATRT that makes it much more of a gargantuan task. Yes, David. Did you want to come back?
Yeah, sorry, one point of clarification. The bylaws specify under the ATRT requirements that set out at 4.6B that assessing and improving the independent review process is a specified role of the ATRT, so it's already in the bylaws.
Oh, okay, thanks. I hadn't checked. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. David, I'm speaking as a participant here. I think that you put your thumb on a good issue, and I think I disagree with Sam a little. I read the bylaws that the IOT would be an ongoing. I read to my horror that it would be an ongoing institution because 4.3N talks about the IRP implementation oversight team. And once the standing panel is established, the IRP implementation oversight team in consultation with the standing panel. To me, that sort of sounded like open-ended. And I thought that that probably was a good thing for the reason that you mentioned, Aubrey. That is, the standing panel should not have the ability to do this by themselves. I strongly believe that. I'm with you on that one 100%. But I think it's unclear. And I think one of the things we could do in our report is make our own comment and request that this be clarified in the bylaws somehow, that the community keep its ability to have some sway over what happens here. I agree with Sam that in 4.6 of the bylaws, the implementation, or the IRP rather, is a subject for ATRT review, but the verb in the overall paragraph is ATRT may assess IRP. It's not mandatory. It's discretionary. And so if they skipped, if they had a high burden of review and simply skipped IRP in one cycle, that would be a 10-year hiatus between reviews. So I actually think this is something that we might want to comment on ourselves. And as a panel, as a participant rather, I would suggest that's something we ought to consider. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. David, as I indicated, this is Aubrey again, as I indicated, on my first reading, I had read it as you did, it was only when I started picking at it, you know, in grand philosophical style and started looking at all the words and the fact that the bylaws are usually pretty good about telling you when, how something is renewed. One of the problems with keeping the IOTs that I thought of is that it becomes a body that's got nothing to do. It spends 3 or 4 years. Now, we know that bodies that have nothing to do often find work. And so I think we need to be careful if we wanted to recommend that somehow an IOT persists as to what role it gives. But since the IOT, in a sense, comes out of the, you know, the empowered community, perhaps that there was some way of tying it into there actually being a specific review. And one thing that haven't been talked about yet is monitoring. Monitoring sometimes means data collection for review. And there are no specific mechanisms for doing that and how that would be set up. So if we're talking about a comment, it may need to include that kind of element too. There's no harm with saying, yes, once this job is open, the IOT blinks out of existence, but it may be possible or it may be within the purview of the empowered community when either requested or alerted or something by the panel that there is a need that it could therefore create another one, you know, a new one with people totally other than us except maybe for Sam, that could work with them in the same way that we have worked now. Of course, we're not working with the panel yet because there isn't one, but we allegedly will be at some point, I assume, unless we completely don't overlap. So, you know, I really don't know. I have no problem, you know, scratching more words down in my drive doc. And by the way, my drive doc is open to anybody that wants to add words and comments and whatever. That you know, to take it if folks can give me sort of a direction they want. I'm more comfortable with the empowered community having a continuing role and activating this kind of mechanism when needed, but that's still a, you know, just a personal preference. Is that a repeat hand, David, or is that a new hand?
No, it's just a new hand. As a participant, just reacting to what you just said, Aubrey, I agree with you largely, and I certainly understand the point that having a body existing that doesn't have much work to do is a dangerous thing. On the other hand, the standing panel is going to be there, and they can come up with rules anytime they wish, I would think. And I don't blame. I think that's a great idea because they're going to be the ones, you know, at the sharp end of what's going on at these hearings, and they're going to see what needs to be done vis-a-vis the rules. So maybe the solution here is not to have the IOT continue on as an empty vessel, but maybe the SOs and the ACs that stood it up in the first place could sort of call an IOT into existence if there's some rules formulating going on from the panel. But I take your point, and I think that this issue is a little bit more than I also expected on first reading. And so we need to develop it further. I don't think it's ready for first reading yet, but I think we need to develop it further. I see Sam's point in the chat that it's not an enumerated power of the empowered community. I agree with that. On the other hand, it may not be too much of a difference based on what bylaw 4.3N says. So I think this needs more work, and I'd be a little bit wary of the panel having unfettered ability to change the rules without some community tether. Thank you.
Yes, thanks. And I agree with you on that last one. Yes, Malcolm.
Hi. Can I ask a question for clarification of how you got to what you were thinking about? If the bylaws say that the panel must, this is not an area I've studied, but if the bylaws say that the standing panel must do something together with the IOT, that strikes me as a pretty strong evidence that it is require that the IoT must exist at the time when the IoT has duties to do. So this, whereas this idea that the IoT might blink out of existence at some point, what is the basis for thinking that it would? Where is there something in the bylaws that you can point me to that said that we will blink out of existence, that says that we will have a limited lifetime?
Malcolm, it's a possible reading of 4.3.N because it only talks about it being established and such. It does not, there's no clue anywhere of how it continues, of how it persists. So, and also in describing its duties, it only talks about develop clear published rules for IRP, rules of procedure that conform. There's no mention of, and after that, participates in the revision of those rules as necessary. So it doesn't say that. It does not, you're right, it doesn't preclude it. It doesn't say, and when done, it blinks out of existence, obviously in more bylaws-oriented language. But nor does it give it a continuity. And anything with a continuity needs a continuity process because it's certainly not that the N of us are going to be forevermore an IoT. So if there were a continuing IoT, then it needs a whole process for renewal. And there is no documentation anywhere of that. So putting those two together, those things together in my second, third, and fifth reading was basically what convinced me that my original thought had been wrong and that really it was meant to blink out. I've got Greg, and then I've got Liz/Sam again. So, Greg.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record, and I've been sitting here reading and rereading 4.3N as this conversation goes on. And I think that looking at 4.3N3 and contrasting it with the latter half of 4.3N1 underscores that the IoT is intended to blink out, because in order to establish the original rules, after the once standing panel is established, the IoT, in consultation with the standing panel, develops the rules. But then when it comes to amending the rules, the IoT has been written out of the picture, and that's fine. I mean, I'm reading this the way I think it's meant to be read, not because I agree or disagree with the result. So trying to be lawyerly about it, I guess. So in 3, there's no mention of the IoT. It says the standing panel, all by itself, may recommend amendments to such rules of procedure as it deems appropriate to fulfill the purposes of the IRP. However, no such amendment shall be effected without approval by the board. After publication, a period of public comment, that's where the commonwealth comes in, or the common wheel, the empowered community, in the public comment. It complies with the designated practice for public comment periods within ICANN. So to my mind, the fact that the IoT is in the first act and not in the third act indicates that we have shuffled off this mortal coil somewhere in between.
Thanks. And yes, that was part of my further readings. Okay. I think I had Liz/Sam next. But I just lost my contact to the Adobe Connect room, so I guess it's good I dialed in by phone with all my whining about it. Liz/Sam.
Hi, this is the slash Sam. So I agree with Greg's take on it too, but I think that the really stepping back, the important issue isn't whether or not this is done through an IoT. What I hear being said by those on the call, including from ICANN, is that it's appropriate if the rules are going to change in the future to make sure that the community is involved in that rule change and also to make sure the community is involved in the broader IRP enhancements if they need to happen in the future. And so to the extent that that needs to be reflected somewhere, I think ICANN would be supportive of it. Whether the technicality of if it's done through an IoT or just through requirement that there be some community, that there be more than just the community seeing it at the end. You know, I think ICANN would be supportive of whatever view that wound up taking.
Sam? I don't know if... Okay, somebody else call if somebody else has their hands up, because I don't see the Adobe Connect at the moment.
Aubrey, hi, it's David. And I was going to close the queue after Liz/Sam because it's an open issue, and I think we should go to the list. I like your document, and I think that if you could sort of briefly summarize this discussion, describe this as an ongoing open discussion, point again to your document, we can have a chance to go at this on the list between now and the next call or next week or two. And that would give us a chance to raise one more issue on this phone call.
Okay, that works for me.
Thanks, Aubrey. Let's move to, let me briefly talk about retroactivity and then raise the consensus policy. You saw on the agenda that I was hoping we'd get to a second reading on retroactivity. I'm going to try and actually do that on the list. I don't want to bring it up now on the phone, but I will mention to us on the phone that I plan to bring that up and try and get to second reading on the list. And so please give that some thought. The email was linked in the agenda. I think it's worth, in the remaining 10 minutes, to at least raise the issue towards a first reading of challenges to consensus policy. And I linked to that email as well that I had sent out, but there were a couple of comments, one from Kathy Kleiman's law firm and one from the non-commercial stakeholder group dealing with consensus policy. And the gist of it was that they were asking that notice be given to the supporting organization, to the stakeholder group, the working group chairs, and the ICANN community that developed consensus policy that's under review in an IRP, under attack, basically. And that as Fletcher put a mandatory right to intervene for those who helped create the consensus policy and those whose interests are represented in or affected by it. It's a pretty broad group of folks. And also, they said, limit what the IRP panel can do when overturning consensus policy. The NCSG went along in large part, and under the draft rules, it's not really spelled out that can be done. And so what I suggested and what I'm throwing out on the table right now for discussion is that I recommended that we create a mandatory right of intervention for the supporting organization, and I limited it to the SO, whose policy was under challenge, not the stakeholder group, not the community, you know, more largely, et cetera. And then I said we should treat along the lines that we do for joinder, specifically that the SO received notice from the claimant that there's a challenge to the policy that they developed, that the SO have a right to intervene, that would again be up to the procedures officer as to how that would be executed. excuse me. Pretty much along the lines of the joinder, but I suggested that we not include stakeholder groups, working group chairs, community members, and those who helped create the consensus policy or whose interests are represented by it. As far as what the panel can do, I thought that the bylaws were fairly limited, you know, in what they can do, announcing that an action or inaction is inconsistent with the bylaws or the articles. I thought that was good treatment. So I've spoken enough on that. I think it's on the table fairly. I think we should look for comments on what I'm suggesting that we do with this consensus policy. So the floor is open. And I see no hands, and I'm not hearing anything. So what I'm going to do is try to come to a first reading on this issue on the list by, you know, mentioning that it was at least raised here. But I think people may need another day or so to gather their thoughts or whatever. But let's get to first reading on the list. I'm very happy with the way things are moving along. So I think that issue is now done for the purposes of this call. We have just a few minutes left, and I had another item called explanation discussion of the process after we conclude this phase. In some sense, we've already spoken a little bit about it on the discussion we just had that Aubrey's going to bring back to the list on what's happening with the IoT. But there are other things we need to do. I think, you know, we'll need to figure out how we're going to sweep through the comments to make sure that we've picked up all of them. We're going to need to, and I'll take the lead on writing a report that's going to describe what we're doing with respect to the rules. We'll probably have to consider a second public comment period. And I know that in a May 26 mail, Greg asked a question that I think we need to address, and that is the new IRP as it exists in the bylaws capable of enforcement, you know, at home and internationally? And so these are the things I think that we're going to have to discuss, along with what we'll be discussing under Aubrey's lead on the ongoing monitoring discussion. So I throw those out there for as food for thought, and that leads to AOB or comments on anything that we've discussed in the phone call. And so I'm going to open the floor to that, and maybe we'll finish a few minutes early, maybe not, but the floor is open if anybody would like to make any comment about what we've been talking about so far. I'm hearing none and seeing none, so we might finish a few minutes early. Aubrey, thanks. I see you're leaving. Thanks for your comments, for your help on this issue, monitoring. And thanks, everybody, for joining the call. We are now done. We can stop the recording, and I thank everybody for attending. Safe travels to ICANN 59, and I'll see you on the list.